everyone. Welcome to The Firm, episode 9.
Ever so slightly late, episode 9.
Yeah, coming in the tablet.
Yeah, a couple of days, but you know, still episode 9. Still this week, so it still counts.
Yeah, technically. Technically within the week. Yeah. Fucking hell, we're getting bad already. Man, it's hard getting around life and trying to actually maintain a schedule.
Yeah, it's the first weekend that we've had, one of us has had something else to do. And it's a bit eye-opening that it's taken 9 weeks for us for that to happen.
Ah, part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, to be fair, me and you live pretty much next door to each other.
Yeah.
So it's not like if I had to go out my way every week to come play against you, I imagine it'd be come week and I can't be bothered,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
We'll record, you know what, I'll Skype in.
Yeah.
And or whatever. But For this week, even though we've not been playing any Guild Ball, which is a bit of a shame because we really should be getting prepared for National.
Yeah. That's it. This is the time to take your foot off the gas. This is the exact time, you know.
I'm getting into the much underrated meditation phase of my preparation, where I don't play any game. I have a good hard think about how much I really want. I've been reading The Secret, if all that helps.
Yeah. If you dream it, you can achieve it.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that cup certificate in my hand. I've been dreaming about strangling someone to death with my bare hand. So one of them come true. I'll let you guess which one by the time National come round. Yeah, but it's like we've not been doing uncompetitive things.
No, yeah, it's been. Well, the reason this one's late is because I'm going to out myself to this community now. I was at an ultimate frisbee tournament this weekend.
God, I don't even know what kind of community. Like, if I go to an archery tournament, I kind of know that I'm going to get working class people who make a lot of money and middle class people who need some shit to do. But yeah, frisbee, it could be anyone. What kind of people show up to a frisbee tournament?
They're either university teams who are going, or they're people who met at university and are just looking for a place to catch up together, and
yeah,
there just happens to be the sport they used to play is there, which is basically more of an excuse for a lot of teams.
Yeah, just a bit of fun then.
Yeah. And then they go out on the Saturday night and get trashed and then lose the first three games on the Sunday morning.
How did you do anyway?
We did not do well. was
everyone else good and you kept letting the team down, or were you carrying it?
No, we had, I did my absolute usual of think I'm doing awfully and then look back and like sort of berate myself through the entire game, but then look back and realise I scored 3 points and got 2 assists.
Yeah.
But like, it's just this thing, it was just a maelstrom of awful things happened, so we ended up with 3 players turning up on one of the days when you need 5 people to play the game.
Yeah.
So we were just pulling people off the side blind going, please play frisbee with us.
Hello, new friend.
Yeah.
Going into, kind of, we've been talking about you kind of, I don't know how to put it, your growth as a competitive player, I guess.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to put you through a gamut of different things. I'm definitely going to have to teach you Street Fighter at some point. And, like, give you a feel for, online competitive gaming a bit more. That's to teach me League of Legends.
Yeah.
But
not fucking like that! That's not how you do it! Give it here!
Yeah, that's how it ends. The only problem, I think, if in a format like that, the only problem would be if you taught me League of Legends and I turned out to be just naturally really fucking good.
Just like some sort of Anakin Skywalker, the chosen one bullshit.
But getting into like going into a different competitive environment compared to something like Guild Ball, we're fresh off the Idex, kind of. Feels like a millennia ago.
Yeah, it was only last week.
Yeah, we're fresh off the Idex game. Did you find any of the benefit and attitude carrying over to Ultimate Frisbee?
Well, it's weird, it does, because like it's saying that whole thing of like going in, going, yeah, we're going to smash it, we're going to do, going to like... I found myself, I gave one of your pep talks to someone else, and it was amazing to watch how it was. Like, because there's one team that goes to this tournament every single year it's on, and they win it every single time, and no one else even comes close. Like, it was like when Tiger Woods was in the PGA. Everyone else knew they were competing for second place.
Yeah.
That's what it like feels like when you see them guys, these names down. And I said to one guy who I went to uni with, like, really nice guy, and I said, oh, who have you got next? And he goes, oh, I've got this team. And I was like, oh, man. okay, cool, how are you feeling? And he just went, well, what's the point, really? And I was like, what? Don't give me none of that bullshit. I was just like, they're going to put five men on the line, same as you. Yeah. They can, when they catch it in the end zone, they score one, they don't magically get 2 points, right? You've scored against them before, you've stopped them scoring before. Just go out and to keep doing that. Yeah. And I saw him and he was just like, there was this fire in his eyes and he got out and he was scoring points and he was getting... They still lost.
But yeah, but not even the point. At least when you, for me, one of the biggest motivators of going up against a really hard player, and I think before in a previous episode, I like to view it as I want the hardest game I can get. I want to win all the time, but I like to think of it as like the hardest team against the hardest player in his best mood. And the way I kind of view it, especially if I'm the underdog, God, if I win this, it's not even expected, I have fucking ruined his day. That whole thing of like going, of course I'm going to win. Who's this guy, Ryan? He's the next person to lose. And don't get me wrong, that's a good attitude to go in with, especially if you've got a champion attitude. But for me, that's a big motivator. That like slight tinge in the back of my head going, man, I can't fucking wait to see the look on your face when I beat you. Or like going like, oh, when I do come, even I don't even have to win sometimes, because I do just a cheeky character play that fucks them over. Or like a cheeky maneuver that didn't keep coming. And they're like, oh.
Just make someone realise they're not of God.
I was going like, oh, yeah, you thought you were just going to have this, did you? Yeah. You thought you were just going to come up and take it off me without me gripping it a bit. Yeah, it's good to give that energy to people. But yeah, did you find any, like, weird comparisons between Guildhall and Frisbee?
Like, there are some, you know. Yeah. There are some, like, that, the sort of, when you sort of stand on the opposite line, so your five stand on your line, their five stand on their line, and you go to put the disc back into play by one team throwing it back. The team that just scored throws it to the other team to put it back into play. And when you're standing there, you'll stand opposite the person you want to mark, right? Mm. So like, you know who it is. And you do get, and I did find myself going, shit, this is just counterpicking. So I was just like, when my team went to move around, like in how we say, like, you know, counterpicking, you're already thinking, we need to stop them doing what they're going to be doing. So like when some of my team started to move, I was just like, no, well, just whoever you're in front of. Like, and you could see that a few teams, when we just didn't move, a few of them were like, what? Like, you saw something, we just sort of literally turned around and we were like, yeah, all right, I'll have him. See how this goes.
But yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, in that situation, I think you're trying to go, oh, what are they doing? For me, again, I know I say it all the time, being reactive, and you'd be amazed at how universal that principle is, from everything from, like, a video game to boxing to literal combat and warfare. Like, being adaptable is the kind of way to go. And you know, well, if they're putting their gags there, shouldn't you adapt and counterpick them in a way? It's like, adaption can take like many forms. And for me, turning around to your Frisbee team and going, no, we're good where we are. We know our guy. We'll adapt after the situation. If we're already getting into this back-footed situation where John can have to take on that big guy because he's tall and he's tall.
Yeah.
Fatty McGee can have to take on the other fat dude. Cause, you know, trying to...
That's exactly how it goes. You know, without even having seen it, you know exactly how it goes. You know, you try and put the tall guy on the tall guy, the fast guy on the fast guy, the fat guy on the fat guy. You know, whereas instead where we turned around, we were just like, okay, well, we know there's a few mismatches. We know they're going to try and abuse it, but we know we can now try and... We can abuse it as well, you know.
Yeah, well, okay. Tall fat guy might be surprised at what short fat guy can get away with. I'll tell you, fucking hard to move a fat guy. There are plenty of, like, again, I'm looking about you were out Frisbeeing, we're neglecting Guildhall practice. I wish I could care. I kind of feel a bit bad because
you sort of set a pitch up and you just sort of walked around each side playing both sides. And
I saw one guy on Twitter who said something like, I'm halfway through the practice I want before national.
Yeah.
Something like 50 games.
Yeah, Josh, he was saying, I talked to Josh quite a lot actually, and he was saying that he was, I think he was 26 games.
Yeah,
he
got more than halfway, yeah. And there was something kind of inside me, and this isn't a criticism of him or anything. It's just, like, going, man, I feel tired at the prospect of having to play 50 fucking games. I know, like, maybe I'm just that arrogant, but it's that thing of, I'm going to say, Paul, I'm kind of thinking to myself now, I'm going to say the most controversial thing I've ever said, outside of, like, vague political bullshit. I do think, to a certain level, practice does have its limit. And for me, the limit of my practice would be I'd stop enjoying the game. If I had to play that many games in a month, it's weird coming on, going, I love this game, I love it enough that I'm going to come talk about it every week.
Mm.
But you can turn around and go, right, you have to get 50 games in this month, or you never play Guildhall again. I don't know... I don't know if I'd make the 50, you know. I'd just be like, oh. I'd get about 30 in during the month and go, I'm not enjoying it. It's not fulfilling the game part of the game now.
See, I'm completely the opposite. If I knew that at our local club on Monday, I could like always get a game in, and I know that Leodis is open on a Wednesday, and if that was a bit closer, if I knew that there was places that I could get a game in, that is exactly the sort of thing that I would do.
Mm.
That sort of, I would go, right, I'm going to Nationals, I want to get this many, yeah, probably do something like that, yeah, I want to get 50 games in. But I'd be like, I want to get 50 games in, I want 10 games against this captain, I want 10 games against this captain, I want 5 games against this captain. And like, I'd go in and I'd like speak to people, arrange games beforehand, and like treat it as almost like drills, like sort of,
yeah, because you literally have a training camp.
Well, because like, the, for me, what I know I'd enjoy and what I know I'd get out of that is the fact that I know that going in on that weekend, going into the first game on Saturday, I'd have that feeling of like when it's being drawn on Longshanks, just going, yeah, like, come for me, do what you want. Are you going to put down blacksmiths? Fine, I'll run through you. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, just knowing that you'd put that preparation in, knowing you'd put the hours in. Whereas I know now that going into Nats in a couple of weeks, that because I've spent one weekend, like, because we tend to get 2 games in on a weekend, and I try and get win on a Monday. I know that I've spent one weekend at this Frisbee tournament. This weekend, we aren't going to get many games in because we've got the straw race.
Yeah.
So like, the idea of I'm going to be thinking back whenever I get that first draw, and if that first draw is something I don't want to play into, I'm going to be thinking, oh man, if like I haven't had as much practice, I haven't like worked as hard at this as I could have done.
Mm.
And so I know that if I don't achieve, then that literally I'm the only person to blame there, because I put something else in front of it. And whereas that I understand how you think that, like, oh well, that's not fulfilling the game part. But for me, it's almost more the competitive part. Like, when we sit down on a Saturday morning, you know, we've got coffee because we're both literally too tired to function, and we're playing a game, the main object there is the game. But when I'm at them settings, you know, there you go, I've paid my money, I've sat down, my name's on the list. Like, the competition is why I'm there.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I don't want to walk away going, I had an awful time, but I won, so everything's fine. But, like, the objective of going there isn't to have 7 fun games of Guild Ball. The objective there is to do as well as I can whilst still enjoying myself.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, the idea of getting them drills in and, like, getting that practice in and, like, say, like, get, like, going, fuck it, I know I hate it, I know I dodge it as much as I can, but going, I want 10 games against the Blacksmiths. And I want 10 games against the list that I know people will take. Like, I want them 10 games. And I want to be beaten into the ground as hard as it is to be beaten in. Because over them 10, I will get better, you know? And then, like, so, yeah, then I want someone to run at me with Vet Rage and just smash me into the pavement 10 times as well. You know? Like, I want these 50 games and I want these hard matchups.
It's weird for me, like, because when I go to a tournament, even though there's obviously more of a competitive edge to it, when I'm playing casually, I play it on the same level. I don't have, like, when I play against you and then I have a tournament, I play completely differently.
Mm.
I'm brutal with you if I would be against any other player I get across from. So for me, the tournament never adds an additional competitive element to me, you know. And maybe I'll do what I normally do. I'll take Street Fighter.
Yeah.
That's an all online ranked.
For everyone playing, drinking Street Fighter at home, that's a shot.
Have a shot for every time I mention Street Fighter. Good job I don't play fucking Tekken, eh? I've been tempted to pick up Dragon Ball Fighter, okay, actually. God help me if I get that. I've already ranked online.
Yeah.
And I only ever play ranked.
Yeah.
So I didn't have, like, my casual games on there and my competitive game. Every game going to win, to compete, to climb up the scoreboard. And I don't take it seriously for Easter, but back in the day when I really gave a shit about leaderboard, every game was like, full on, I want to win, and I got to a fairly decent level at that. Enough that I've made fucking like top rank 4 in the world rage quit on me.
Mm.
And maybe that's where them little bit of satisfaction come from for me. Because I mention fighting games so much because it informs so much of my competitive side. And I love the tournament, and I love watching fighting games, more importantly. I like watching Guild Ball, actually, but I always like to watch the, like, for example, we mentioned Vincent Kirkhope before, his editing spot on. one. Quick, be admitting another good one. Who
that, yeah. They're the one. That's what I love. I love that sort of, this is what happened. Okay, there's nothing happening in this bit. So it's really fast and it's just chaff. Okay, here you go. Like sort of a 45 minute long video. Like there you go. Here is a portion of Guild Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that for me, yeah, the competitive side of it is a part of the enjoyment. And for me, playing 50 games, it'd be like playing a tournament all month long.
Yeah.
And I'd get burnt out by the end of it. That's how I'd kind of go.
Right,
into
it. Yeah.
Another weird thing about people who practice a lot, I think it seems so obvious to me, but I don't know if people think in the same way. They always want to get practice with their captain. When people talk about preparing for a tournament, they never go, I'm going to play with a different team.
Yeah.
And get a feel for them. Because for me, from my most confident matchup, like, I'll take any Brewers player any day of the week, flat out. I feel good in that matchup if I'm doing anything. The tournament we played at a few weeks ago at Liverpool, my first two matchups were against Brewers, and two wildly different Brewers team, one kicking, one killing, basically. And I felt confident in both of them if I could get. I basically toyed around with them both and put them in nightmare scenarios every time because I knew I could. But half of that wasn't from going, oh, I've looked at the cards and I've practiced a lot against Brewers. I've never played against the Brewers one outside of a tournament, but I played with them. I know their cards. I know what they can do. I know what they can get away with because I've tried it and I know how fucking hard it is to get that shit moving if the opponent doesn't want you to.
So like, you know how to build it. You know how to break it.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of competitive gaming is I can't just pick my character all the time. Like this is really common in Tekken. It's the reason I don't play it, in fact. Is that if the way to get good at that game is to know all the characters.
Yeah.
And know what they do literally, almost from memory. And you can look at a Guild Ball card and figure out what the characters do, but in a fighting game like Tekken, where they could have a command list of moves they can do that is 200 long. And they all have frame data and what you know could be punished, what they recover from, what they can try and do, shenanigans. And Guild Ball's kind of different than that. For me, looking at the card isn't enough. And I know people can go, I look at the card, oh, I know what they can do. For me, the experience of playing that team is literally invaluable. Again, I feel really confident going into Engineer. Trying to think of that many other matches I've played, I feel good against Tomo. I feel good against Butcher. And half that Butcher shit, when I remember when I first started playing Guild Balls, the Butcher, one of my most feared matchups, really didn't know how to crack them at all. I thought, fucking hell, they get every bleed on everything, momentous damage on everything.
Yeah.
Like, they just felt unstoppable. And a couple of games for the Butcher, I'm like, man, this guy's really suffering from department. And playing against him, I'm going like, oh yeah, you go, oh, I'm going to have Ox come in on a Varian or whatever. Go, you know, I'll counterattack. I'm going, go on, just fucking fudge that dice roll and give me 4 influence.
Yeah.
Let me just steal that right off you. Let me see the look on your face when you go, alright, I can't get any more attacks. Tough skin, butchery, turnover, I guess. But that's from just playing with the team. For me, looking at the card isn't enough. I think if you're going to play a shitload of games, I don't think you should play every other game should be a different team.
Yeah.
But for every 10 games, maybe a couple of them, don't just play a game for matchups, you know, like play with teams that you hate. Have a feel for it. And maybe, to be fair, if you play with other teams, you might find a team who fit you really well.
Mm.
Like you put Union on the board once and you're like, man, I do really.
I'll tell you what, it's going to sound ridiculous, but I've tried beta lists before. Mm. I've tried other teams with beat sticks. You know, this is going to make me sound like an absolute idiot. I tried the Thresher before the Thresher list before the nerf.
Yeah,
and I couldn't figure it out. You know, I've tried running Butchers. I've tried playing with Jim's Butchers a couple of times. Couldn't do it. You know, I've tried the 6-0 with Corsair, who's my boy, and I couldn't figure it out. But I put that Vet Rage team down, and I saw the code. Like, I saw through the matrix, and I was just like, shit, I know what I'm doing. Like, I just had this magic moment where I was just looking at it, and I was going, yeah, that's what I do. That's how I do this, you know.
Or just like surprised. Well, fuck me, I'm out. I'll play this game.
There was a bit of it like that, you know, because I was going, whenever I go to secure a takeout, even though that's a way that I get a lot of points, you know, well, stupid comment to make. Of course it is. In Guild Ball, there's two ways to get fucking points. But you know what I mean, like, it's not my favoured way. I prefer to get a goal, but I feel confident in the right situation I can get a takeout.
I'm a big fan of killing the mascot 12 times.
Like, With like Corsair, Kraken, Jack, and Sicarna going in there, and oh, I can't wait to get Vet Sicarna, yes! But like with them going in, I feel like I know how to confidently make that situation as awful for the other person,
yeah.
And eventually I'll get a takeout out of it. It's not gonna be as fast as if I did it with a killing team, obviously. But when I put this team down, I could just see how it worked. I saw how the takeout game worked. You know, so I think that I'm going to pick them up as a second team, you know, going into season four. But speaking of how you were saying you need to play with different teams and stuff, I was thinking about this. And I want to make season four, I want to make that my season, right? I think that, like, I started ramping up in season three. I'm still in the bottom third of tournaments are coming. I don't play on bottom table, like, for Spoon anymore, which I like, but I'm still in the bottom third. So what I want in season four is I want to come out of that. I want to by the end of season four, I want to be winning tournaments, winning local events, you know? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and track all my games, because I've seen a lot of people do this. I see every now and then, like Beard Minis puts a tweet out and he's talking about the six he's taken and he's got these great spreadsheets. And I was just like, that would be so interesting to look back on. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to track my games and I'm going to make sure that I play a variety of captains. So I get that thing of like, yeah, I know how to break this team, because when I played them, this is how I made it work. So I'm going to try and track across different teams, different players, try and get a whole host of games under my belt instead of just playing Corsair every single time, even though I'm probably going to switch to Navigators anyway.
Yeah. Well, another aspect to that, the larger community. Like, I think a big part of Guild Ball is really data driven, and I don't think that's particularly, you know, controversial thing. Yeah, there's a lot of people who kind of put a lot of time and effort into thinking. And I don't think it helps. It's a mathematical game, you know, on a fundamental level. What's the max distance I get out of this? Outside of dice rolling, the dice rolling themselves have a bit of a data element to them.
Oh shit! What was it? I think I was listening to Double Dodge yesterday, and one of them said, when people say my dice were bad, he goes, no, your maths is shit.
Well, fucking hell, talk about insult to injury.
yeah, but it's right, isn't it? You say it's a maths game.
I've got bad dice. No, you're retarded. You thought I were an asshole. I'm going to steal that one. Thank you, Double Dodge. Just when someone gets really angry at me, when I do that to them, go, whoa, don't shout to me, Double Dodge, there, came throw it that way, throw it all your, yeah, put your, send your tweet to my official Twitter, Double Dodge, at Double Dodge. I know it's weird, but I try and be resistant to data.
Yeah.
Like, meta is a really common thing, and a lot of games have this as well. Meta, for those who don't know, meta it generally refers to the kind of the teams and play style that crop up around the community. A local meta are the team style play types that develop around a small community. Obviously, you've got country meta, UK meta, German meta, and then there's international meta.
Yeah.
And I try and be resistant to meta thinking.
I think that's just your personality, though.
Yeah,
that's just
how I am. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm quietly starting to realise, because I've not really interacted with too much of the community outside this podcast. I went on the forum every now and then, but I didn't really go through the whole thing. And I've been on Twitter more, fucking hell. Been on Twitter more. Been on Facebook and shit. I've been keeping more of an eye on the community, and half of it for me is like, I underestimate just how much of it is, like I say, data-driven. And nothing wrong with that. And I get why. Like, I'm not... It's one weird thing when I say, I try to be resistant to the meta. I don't go, this is me going, oh, the meta... People who do that are retarded, don't do that. It's me saying that I understand perfectly well, like, when a bunch of people in your local community play one team, and they all like one team, and they're abandoning teams they used to like for this one team, maybe they figured something out that another community haven't. If you go to one team, if we go to Yorkshire, go to Leeds, and everyone were playing Butchers, bar no one, there'd be a party to think, what do they know that I don't?
Yeah.
But it's weird how, because there's so many variables with individual player skill, the styles and types of players, and that's another aspect I think really underestimated. If I was in a meta it was just me dumping me in a meta, and it was nothing but three other super nervous, super cautious players who played a bunch of different teams, but they were just like, maybe my play style had fucked them over a bit, and they got, what if they turned around and went, man, Ryan beats him all the time, he's got hunters, maybe we should all play hunters now, and they get on the hunters, you know, they bought the mystery box, all three of them went in for the mystery box, and I'm going, can't wait to get a bunch of different teams going. I don't know what those. But yeah, like, they all got on board the hunting train.
Mm.
For me, the reason I would beat them in that scenario was my personality type and the manner of which I play. Them coming aboard the hunting train wouldn't make them beat me. But if you came and looked in from the outside, the small community, wow, they all play hunting. Why? Oh, the guy who plays hunting always wins in that one. But they play really great matchups against him. Why can't they beat him? We play a weird team. Why is that? For me, there's so many variables, it makes it hard to extrapolate completely useful information. And I try and take cards from players on an individual level if they come at me. I think some players are obviously just better than others. No amount of meta is going to make a Steve Easton, a Henry Kay, an Alex Box, or any of these German fellows. No meta, no knowledge of the German meta is going to make me magically beat some of the best Germans. And it could be that thinking could even poison my way of thinking. If I go, man, Germans really like whatever teams are playing. I really haven't kept up with it. But yeah, they all for the sake of argument, all of the, like, say the Italians show up.
Yeah.
And they all play Masons. And they just start fucking people up. I think to myself, fuck, all Masons. All of them like the style. All of them love this new model. Veteran chisels being broken out left, right and centre. God, how do I... Maybe I should think on how I counter that. All of a sudden I'm getting away from my own game plan, my own way of thinking, where I'm strong. I've been watching a shitload of UFC. And you think, how the fuck would mixed martial arts and Guild Ball ever intersect? But you'd be amazed. When people are preparing for a fight, and bear in mind, when you go to a UFC tournament, you don't fight 10 guys in a day. You only fight one guy. You get months of preparation. You get to look at videos, you can see what you're going to do. Like, if Guild Ball was like that, imagine how different it'd be. You go to Nationals and you went, you're only playing against one guy. Here he is. He's on YouTube. He's got a Twitter presence. He tells you what team he's playing all the time. How tempting. How much would you change how you'd play just getting across from him any day of the week? Yeah. And you could play better, don't get me wrong. That extra knowledge isn't always hurtful. But the way fighters prepare for something like mixed martial arts, they never go, like, if a guy's really good at grappling and the other guy is a boxer, they go, okay, avoid the boxing, try and grab the fucker. But they won't turn around to him and go, oh, you know what? Because, like, there are even other kinds of boxing that defeat boxing, do you know what I mean? They don't try and teach him a whole new thing. They go, okay, Muay Thai boxing beats regular boxing, so for 4 weeks we're going to teach you a shitty version of Muay Thai. They go, no, you're great at the grappling thing. Well, fuck on what you're good at, and you're best at this thing will beat him at his best at his thing. But we'll try and teach you the hard counter to that. They might teach him a couple of cheeky maneuvers, like a kick or something else. But for the most part, they never go, oh yeah, we've figured out a new martial art that beats that one, so we'll teach you that. If we can just be shit at that.
Yeah.
For me, the variables that make you win a game, it's so hard to, like, probably half the reason I fucking love this game so much. There's so much that comes into it, so many different people, so many great different teams and characters and configurations that you genuinely can't predict how it's going to pan out. And I don't think it helps that the Germans play like 100 fucking games a month. Like, the Germans are like the Japanese in fighting games. Or like South Korean in archery. It's like they're just great, and they have that very great fucking mind for it, to be fair. But yeah, I kind of think that's where the Germans are at right now. They're the ones to beat, because they're fucking hammering out so many games. They're trying to get rid of all the variables. They're fucking doing a good job at the minute. I'm thinking at the minute, like, these guys... As much as I like to fall back on, it's all a matter of mind over matter, personality, psychology, it's hard to compete with a guy who played 100 games.
That's what Josh was doing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. And I do about it, just that thing of, like, don't get too caught. I like to try and warn people. Like, don't get too caught up in one thing. Don't get caught. I feel like people are walking into a trap almost. I think it's wrong to get a shitload of practice in. Like, as you said, it's hard to compete with a guy who plays 100 games a month. Every month. Like, I couldn't, literally, if I had to play 100 games a month, I would not play this game. Like, if that's what you needed to be competitive, luckily you don't. Like, I can play this game relatively casually and still do alright. But fuck me, it's hard to figure out what to take away from meta sometimes. For me, I know for some people to go, Yorkshire are playing this, London are playing that, Germany are playing this, and for them the data seems really useful to them. And I totally get that, but for me personally, I guess I find it all a bit much to take in and get something I can actually put actionable on the board. For me, it's interesting, but it doesn't actually change the way I play. I don't know, I've gone on a bit of a fucking rant on that one.
No, I know what you mean, but, like, the going back to things, saying it's hard to do with the sheer volume of variables, like you say.
Oh, yeah.
Say say there was one guy, like, you say they went, right, you're going to Nationals and you're going to play Tony. And like you said, here's Tony on YouTube, here's Tony on Facebook, here he is on Twitter. And, like, you had all that time to prepare for it. I think I'd go completely the opposite way. I think I'd watch every single game. I'd see everything he's tweeting. And if every single game the bloke's playing Hammer, then I'm probably going to spend quite a lot of my time thinking, well, what is Hammer going to bring to it? I'm not going to think, how do I stop Hammer doing the Hammer thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to think, what is going to be what they're trying to do?
Yeah.
What is it that he's going to be trying to do? And how, you going through my normal game plan, am I going to be able to prevent that? How am I going to put my foot in the door when he's trying to close it? You know?
If I had to come down on, like, one particular thing,
Then you win so much more than I do. I think you're right.
I don't want to... to be fair, I've got a mind for the game for some fucking reason. I played Infinity before. I've got balls at that game. Like, I played a bit of Aristea, but I'm no wonderkind at that either. I only played a couple of games, but it's not like I played it and went, aha! I'm just godlike at the game now. And, like, even in games that I genre that I like, in video games, I played other games and gone, they're not for me. I'm just not good at this game. For some reason, Guild Ball appeals to me on a level that I can understand it. And more importantly, quickly look at a card and go, again, we'll go into this in another episode, but, like, you know when you're picking a new team? We recently bought all the Alchemists. And I know we both had a look and had a think of what teams we want to build. And I picked my team, not particularly because I liked hugely what they did. I kind of picked my models on the basis of how much it'd fuck with the other dude, and how much it'd just annoy you. I go, like, man, I can just open the turn with a shitload of poison, shitload of fire, fuck with your movement. That'd just be an annoying team to play against. If Venom goes last, he could try and put that bleed up. I know that'll get you sweating. just like, oh yeah, Vet Catalyst, so much, that just looks like a fun model. And not fun in the traditional sense, just like, yeah, I get a charge, intensify, witness means just a really fun character to play. Like, if I played the Mortician, I'd bring Casket every time. Not particularly because I've looked at it in card and gone, man, this dude's just off the hook. Casket time's ridiculously fun, and you've got a really cool model. I had a thing on Twitter where there were people talking about Chaska, and we had a bit of back and forth. Mainly, a lot of people don't rate Chaska, which I totally get. Not very good at damage, non-momentous damage, more importantly. So you're kind of giving something good up to get damage with him. And he needs a lot for what people think, I think, and for little. But the interesting thing about, I had a big conversation with Jake Fox. And we kind of went back and forth, but we kind of came to the same conclusion, but the disagreement came from a different place. Jay kind of went in going, yeah, Chaska's really great at pushing people around and getting snared off, but that's not how I play my game. Like, no, fair enough. But I go, like, yeah, Chaska, but if you'd ask me on the same day, I go, Chaska's really good at pushing and getting snared off. Man, that's just what I need, baby. Hand him over. We pretty much agreed on what he was good and bad at. We're exactly on the same page regarding the model.
It was as almost as if the two of you had seen the same card and saw and the exact same data.
Yeah, some kind of different interpretation to come up. And that's the thing. Chaska gets a surprising amount of work done in my game. Some of my best games where I've absolutely crushed a motherfucker and really given him something to think about, it's usually been a Chaska opener that fucked him. That for me, pushing someone off the pitch with Chaska just put my opponent in a different place. And I can see it on him. Like, I went up against a Bruins player with Friday at the end of the pitch. Didn't even need to try the Bruins box, the playbook or enough. Banking momentum, killing him, pushing him off the pitch. But that element of, like, going, oh man, why didn't I think of it?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's why Chaska's there. To go, surely that one model over there can't kill this one model over here. I go, I don't even have to kill you. I just need a couple of hits and away you go. And it brings fear into people, more importantly. That's the thing I really love about the push game. I know some people don't really rate pushing as a way to get points. Can I get why? It's unreliable. Like, we had that talk about Jack before. Jack can push people really reliably and really good as well. But the thing that I've said to you before, the way I counter that is by just walking 8 inches within the edge of the pitch.
Yeah.
And then the turn is over. Like, you can't get it. Not the same way with takeout. You can get a dice spike, but there's no dice spike that's going to make Jack get an extra inch of push. He either gets it or he don't. But
unless he gets the rep.
Yeah, oh yeah. But even then, you have to be within a certain range of heroic. Like, there's a limit, basically. And the thing that I like about the push game, and we had it in Leidic Tournament and talked about it before, push Keener off, push Jaykar off. And the thing that I really got mileage out of them pushing, weren't I got a shitload... I didn't win the game by pushing people off the pitch, but I made him afraid of the push. For me, oh, that's almost it. I mentioned there were some guys from, like, boxing or whatever, who, like, the threat of something, it's just as good as the thing itself. Like, you going up against, you know, the classic Mike Tyson or whatever, he's coming in, you know he's got a left hand that will knock you clean out. You're raising your left hand, right, he's not getting it. You're putting your guard up to block his left. He's not getting that for the life of me. All the while, you're dropping guard elsewhere. There's something missing now from your game. But for me, you go, oh, well, fuck, you've given up your best tool now. That guy's blocking your left hand the entire time. That guy's blocking your pushing for all the time. But he's giving up something. For the sake of avoiding the push, he gave up. Great positioning.
A third of the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. He handed it over to me. And he went, you're not getting a push. And the funny thing is, that was the right thing to do. He did made the correct call, and it still worked out in my favour, because I had a pusher. And I get why. Again, I don't know the way Jake plays. Again, I could play him. He could fucking crush me. And I totally get what you mean now.
Yeah.
It could be the same for me. What I'm getting back from Chaska, I could be giving up something spectacular. I won't say that in the case. But for me, that's the real core of a push. That's what makes a push so fucking good. It's the element of fuck. Like, shit, I've got 30 health and tough hide. Why is my guy dead?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, cool. I got two hits for Chaka and I could double push out of here. You can't underestimate that level of threat. And like, yeah, if we were playing the game I played that other guy, where I push, if you started with Kraken, and I put Chaska on that side of the board, if I push Kraken off, you know what I do, you're not bringing him on the edge of that pitch.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I've ruled him out now. Like, I've basically casket-timed Kraken for that. You know, I've kept him away for just another turn.
Yeah.
That's another benefit of, like, casket time. It just, yeah, it keeps someone away from you. Don't get too caught up. For the people listening, don't look at the cards for yourself and try not to think too much outside of yourself. What do you like about this model? What do you like about the card? And yeah, I kind of can't overstate it enough. For me, looking at a card and judging for yourself, I think people rule out the fact they could discover something.
Yeah.
I think that's the weird thing. People go, oh, I can't think of anything that anyone else hasn't thought of. I won't be so sure. Like, have a look at the card. You never know. You might have a strategy. You might be just waiting to break this game. Like, I'm looking forward to some motherfucker going, shit, like, African Greed, that was a classic one.
Yeah.
Of a model that was clearly intended to be one way. Someone figured it out, and before you know it, you'll get a fucking 30-inch goal.
For African Greed. Start of season 3, yeah.
That's a bit of clever outside thinking, which Dean Forge rightly came down on.
Yeah.
But yeah, that little bit of outside the box thinking can just really, really push a game. Maybe I hammer it home so much, because I know the community is one way, and I just want to introduce an element of doubt almost. I know I'm in a minority, and probably for a good reason, to be fair. I don't want to I've actually think I play the way I do, and I enjoy it mainly, but I don't want to go far to care my way particularly correct or useful. It works for me, probably don't work for most people. But because that side of the community is already really well represented, of look at the data, look at the meta, who's playing what right now, who's strong.
You want to sort of plant the flag and wave the banner for a
even if I'm just on my own going, whoa, think about your attitude. Think about your personality. Think about how well rested you are before a tournament. Shit like that. Like I say, there's so many factors that people don't consider. It seems so obvious to me. Like, if I put you in your first tournament, go, oh, right, we're at a national. I went, oh, you're playing against Freddy? Like, yeah. I know it seems weird, but I was talking to Freddy earlier. He just off a 12-hour shift, and he's only had half an hour sleep. How much better would you feel about that matchup? You go, I'm going to fucking crush this dude. He's not even going to be awake during this. But you won't, like, again, even if you played the deadliest team known to man, if he, like, came from Cumbrian and he got the original fresher, he got the pre-year out of fresher, if you knew that guy hadn't had a bite to eat in 2 days, had no sleep at all, coming off a 12-hour shift at work, go, I'm going to fucking murder this dude. Right. Keep that in mind. Man, I'm in a fucking ranty mood today. But I've been thinking too much.
But you always are, aren't you?
I'm just too fucking... My problem is I'm a train of thought guy. When I talk about something, I keep going with it. And the second I get broken up, I forget. And I'm like, whatever, move on. I almost don't care enough to remember. You know, I'll be listening back to this. And people go, remember that shit you said in the last episode? Nah, I don't really remember it. Forward all your hate mail to it. Yeah. Think on unusual models. We've got people are new model floating around out there.
Oh yeah, yeah. And as sort of a brewer's graduate, what do you think of Season's Figure?
I really like him. I think he's really good. I think he's just a good... He doesn't have the explosive playbook, right? But how fucking solid is this guy?
Mm.
Relatively got good momentous damage when you need it. Good momentous damage, by the way. Like, 3 momentous at the end of his playbook. 2 on 3, maybe. Not perfect, but fucking hell, what more do you want? He can actually dodge early, which is good for him. More importantly, he gets balls gone early.
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love balls gone. And with a 4-8 kickstart, it doesn't even matter if he's engaged. You're still getting the 3 dice.
Yeah, with he'll negate close control, and more importantly, even the guy, like, a classic close control encounter, I run up to vet velocity, I go and tackle, I don't know, okay, I've eaten close control, I'll try and tackle again, okay, now I'll counter-attack. Even if you tackle, I'll tackle back. The good thing about balls gone, it eats for close control, and because they get 3-2, your average striker, 4 tack, they've got to hit both of those playbooks. Even if that was Fakana, 3-1, better for him. Bad example. But, but for a lot of like good strikers who are going to have the ball, Angel, another good example.
Yeah.
Angel and Velocity, 4 long playbook. Missed, another 4 long playbook. They need to get good results. They need all a hit. One miss, bang, you don't get the tackle back.
Mm.
And then I can dodge or whatever. Or what, you can knock down. Great, just a good player.
Mm.
Really solid, good. 4-8 kick.
Yeah.
For me, 8-inch sprint, 8-inch kick, making someone automatically a decent model. How are you feeling on looking at him?
I really like him. I think that you've got to think of him in the context of the church.
Oh, yeah.
And how they play that, like, completely fluid ball. Like, and putting balls gone into that lineup is just amazing. It's just great.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he's got balls gone, like, we're seeing another card come out with yet more stripping the ball and doing something with it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in the same way that Vetsukana has that basically ranged tackle, you know, like, trigger off someone else. You know, that sort of thing where we're going to see ball play come in more.
Yeah.
And I think that's just Scream Season 4, which I think is awesome, looking at him. I'm getting more and more tempted every time I see them, you know. I really like the church because they've got that. I'm going to wait to see how the navigators play. And I'm going to wait to see what changes happen to the fish in going into season 4. But I just love the way they play. I love that fluid, constant, keep the ball moving play style. And the fact that they're getting more stuff to, like you say, get around close control.
Yeah.
But more importantly, get around the counterattack, you know. Mm. So, like, if he takes that, he then immediately gets the kick. So, like, if he gets it, it's off you. You can't even count. Attack and tackle back, and then
when you know when you go for a pack, do you have to be able to reach from the pack to try and pack to them, or can you go, oh, I don't make it, I'll just kick out to space? Do you have to make a pass without influence? Do you have to be in range of someone?
No, you pass it. It's a pass when you pass it into space.
Oh, so you don't kick it into space. You
pass it into space. Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
So, like, there was a thing on this on Gubs actually earlier this week. A kick is broken down into a shot and a pass, and a pass can target a friendly or it can target a space.
Oh, so you don't kick to open space. You pass to open space. Oh no! Oh, fucking brilliant then. Yeah, that literally just I'll get okay, that for me. That'd be the thing going. Oh, I really need a good pack to get the most out of it.
Yeah.
But just be able to go, yeah, the ball is now gone. More importantly, the good thing about ball gone is it's bigger himself for close control.
Yeah, yeah. 2 armor, close control.
Yeah.
Love it.
So, yeah, just literally, I take the ball,
negate
your close control. The best you can do is try and negate mine to make the parting blow less fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah, at that point, dodge, get out of here. A few minutes don't knock you down and do some other bullshit.
Speaking of knockdowns, he keeps his yellow colours, doesn't he?
Flawed as well. One of my personal favourite character traits. It's the reason I really like original figure. 2 tack on the knockdown model. Really good.
Yeah, it just is. It's just good.
Yeah.
But, like, is heroic as well. Is another part of that keeping the ball moving, keeping the ball fluid, like play style that I was talking about. Once per turn during his activation, target friendly model within 6 inches may immediately make a pass without spending influence. How fucking great is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just asking for snapshots. Like, so bang, he ball's gone, bang, gives it to someone else. I'll use my heroic now with the momentum I just gained from that. There you go, you can pass that off straight onto someone else who could then use that to dodge away if you're just like, we need to get the ball out of the situation. We're in a pretty tight, we're all quite close, we need to get someone on a wing, we need to get the ball to safety. Bang, 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 go, dodge. He's gone.
Yeah, the ability to manoeuvre the ball with that Flexible.
Yeah.
If he needs a 4-inch dodge, dude, pack to me, I'll get that extra movement. He needs to get the ball the fuck out of there. Pack to mid, kick that ball even further back.
Mm.
Even if human benediction don't give you the extra range for that, and potentially just target someone within 12 inch or whatever. I think Gray can give the extra range.
Both of them.
Or both of them. There you go.
I think it's both of them.
I don't know if off the top of my head, but yeah, one of them give extra range character play. They get to count them off.
I know Benny definitely does it.
Yeah.
Because you can Red Fury through him, can't you?
Yeah.
So.
I'm tempted to get Gray if you can get it. But yeah, Benny, fuck, you're going to pick benediction anyway. What am I talking about? And we're talking about non-model Griff. That ability to get the ball moving. Like, again, he can get the ball, cure it, knock it back to someone, and then, yeah, tell them to knock it back even further. Yeah.
It works either way.
Yeah.
It works either way. You can either be really aggressive with it and go for a sick goal run, or you can be like, this guy's on 8, we need to get this out of here, get it back, someone put it on the line. Like, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
but then he's quite good. He's quite a good ball carrier himself. 2 armor, good counter attack, close control.
Yeah, tackle from 1.
Yeah,
getting ball gone on 2. So even on the tackle counter attack, he's still super potent.
Mm.
Oh
my god! Imagine trying to bounce, like charging in to try and bounce off him, and it all goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, literally just like bang off you. Fuck off.
Every single time I see a new card, I get so excited right now. I think the game is going in exactly the direction I want it to. I'm so fucking giddy.
You know,
but it is, isn't it? It's like it's so clearly moving towards football, which is the reason I picked the game up in the beginning. It's the reason I play Fish.
You know, I'm really warming up to Infinity. No, I don't think Murder Ball's going anywhere. And I think people are going to find, again, the people who love killing, like myself. My first call.
Here I go killing again.
Yeah, my first port of call is going to be figuring out a way to get rid of that ball.
Yeah.
But it depends on what the hunters get.
Yeah.
Season 4, we're in this very weird period right now where you got Schrodinger's team right now. Every team is potentially great or potentially bold.
Yeah.
No pun intended. And
they're literally in purgatory.
Yeah.
Just waiting.
Just that magical grey area of like
just waiting. Just looking at the watches going, when's October?
Oh yeah, like if my team about to become spectacular or going to be ruined, or if everyone can actually be balanced. Like,
well, the best that I can't remember who described it as this. It was they were talking about a different game. But the best way would be if it wasn't that, like you said, instead of all the teams being, oh, my team's great, my team's bad, obviously everyone should be in the middle.
Yeah.
It should be completely, like, spirit level. But the best way it can then feel is that when you pull off your thing, like, whatever like, it's how guild identities are coming into it. Like, when you pull off the thing that makes your guild, you should feel overpowered as fuck. You should feel so broken for managing to do it. Like, just for that flash second, just for that flash in the pan, the moment the trigger's pulled, you know, and then obviously, but then they've got that moment when they do it as well. You know?
Yeah.
That's how it feels when you, like, when you're playing, when playing League of Legends and stuff, when you've got that's when I used to play a support character, right? And when I get my ultimate off, and when I get it, and everyone's stunned, and my team just dive in, and you just feel like a god when, you know, you did something that everyone else who plays them has access to.
Yeah.
But you get that moment of, God, yeah, I'm so good at this. That is,
your veins start popping in your arms. Yeah, no, exactly what you mean. I think that's the right way to play it. Like, for me, but again, I know I'm going to contradict myself on some point, but it's almost like if this shit's complicated. Balance is overrated in many ways. We could just go Union versus Union every time, perfectly balanced game. That's how we find out who the champion is. Yeah, imagine if you get to grand final, you've been playing your team, whatever.
Mm.
You go to make sure we find out who the actual best player is, you both play making, and the game making team.
Yeah.
Perfectly balanced.
Oh, also, and to make sure it's the perfect thing, we're going to take these dice away. You're going to take the exact average results.
Yeah, the terrain mirror feature on the board, and in fact, just in case, we'll make sure you're starting the game position. Shenanigan from the kickoff.
Yeah,
the ball just starts from the middle, perfectly balanced. Away you go. Yeah, a path of. For me, a good game like this, generally, on a one-to-one level, they should be balanced. For me, in a game like this, the element of balance comes in how much one model can do on their own. The thing that Fresh is a good example, he's the most recent nerf guy. the thing that made Thresher really good. In fact, he needed that little bit of fill, but the payoff was just immediate and spectacular. And he could, on his own, just run through someone and run through a fair few fucking people. He could do a bit of damage without any help.
Well, that's what you were saying when I when I played that Vet Rage that once, yeah. And I went, oh, that's amazing. And you said, the great thing there is that he can buff himself.
Yeah.
He gives himself that absolute killer status.
The thing with Vet Rage, though, is that there's shit you can do about it. Like, yeah, exactly. I lost the Vet Rage, definitely. I'm not going to go, I'm not going to be a guy who loses a game and go, oh, fucking Vet Rage. Oh, yeah, I get that.
Hashtag needs nerf.
I've got a good, like, again, I generally sound funny thing. I do think Vet Rage is powerful, but there are ways to counter this guy. There are ways to fuck up his day. The way you counter Vet Rage, try not to be engaged. Easier said than fucking done.
No.
But you can, you know, you can do shit about it. On balancing, yeah, making sure that on a one-to-one level, okay, Vet Rage is good at kicking buff himself, but he does need support in the sense.
Yeah.
You can't just go, whatever. It came with Thresher. Thresher did need support, but it was shit that you could put out there safely. Even with Vet Rage. Okay, Gutter and Vet Rage work together. That team, that combination, pretty much. Why, and why wouldn't you? Fucking great combination. But you've got to put Gutter out there.
Yeah.
With something like the Harvest Marker, you put it on kind of your half of the pitch.
Yeah.
And the way your opponent had to counter it is by coming to you and going like, oh, I've sprinted up past Thresher.
Yeah.
And I've run over that Harvest Marker. Your move, bitch. Well, what am I going to do now other than just flat out kill you with Thresher?
Yeah.
And then do what I'm going to do anyway on the next turn. On a one-to-one, the way you balance the game, just like making sure one model can't do too much.
Yeah.
And again, I think the most satisfying part of this game are when you get the multiple set up.
Yeah.
This guy helped, got me win.
That's what I mean. That's when you get that sort of, like, the example of what I was using before would be, for example, how I was saying the fluid nature of the ball when you play the church. Well, from the way I'm seeing the church at the moment, is if you got that killer, like, trigger of everything off, like, Spigot went in, he got the ball, was gone out, the pass went out, and they and you used them to dot and used that to dodge up, right? And you then triggered his heroic, so that person who just dodged it into pass range of someone who's in range for a snapshot, so then you like hit that heroic, they pass off snapshot, that's when you just go, oh yes. But the balance there being that you're like, yeah, we're a team all about the ball. Where's the ball? Oh
yeah,
you see what I mean
there? Oh yeah. On that level, having all the team, again, I want the team to generally be balanced. And the point of the game, like I said before, is to make the situation as unbalanced as you can. I played plenty of games with people who have come away going, that fucking team, how do you stop that shit? I can't even curse, man.
Yeah.
Like, every time I get rid of it, it's right back again for almost nothing. Ferran, he just hits me and I'm snared.
Yeah.
I'm flat fair. Chaka, don't even get influence, he's putting a trap down the board. What the fuck's that? Hearn, he's got 3 influence, but he may as well be 5.
Yeah.
With 3 skewered. I imagine the people walked away from that team going, fuck. But yeah, that element of like, I'm going to try and make an unbalanced situation here. I'm going to be rolling so many fucking dice. You wouldn't even think it was possible. Like, when you, there are plenty of people who have had Vet Rage activation where they're rolling 22 tack or some shit.
Yeah.
It's just like, they can't even hold the dice in their hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that for me, that's a big part of this game. I don't think imbalance in a way is anything to be particularly frowned upon, because it's what makes the game, you know, fun. It's good to have the variables, it's what makes it worth playing time and time again. But I don't want to get too negative on this one.
Well, balance is made by, like, if you've got a seesaw, you're either balanced by having nothing at either end, yeah. Or you're balanced by having 2 equally fucking massive weights at either end.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. But fucking speaking, the new model, a chisel, eh? Vet chisel.
Looks very good. I was like, you know how I was saying about I want to play other teams in season 4, I want to track my teams. Like, looking at this card, I was just like, I can see her being a centrepiece for an incredible team.
When I looked at chisel, she kind of immediately failed the test. Bad model.
Yeah.
I mean, failed the test for what I think of in how you get generally a balanced team. If I'm talking about, you know, all the guilds against each other, an internal balance. Chisel's so fucking good. Why would I not bring this model?
Do you think the vet decimate issue?
But yeah, but the thing that makes me cool, a lot more cool with Edekame, is that she's a good, I think, an above average player in a shit team.
Yeah.
Mason's aren't that bad of a team. Chingle is really fucking good. Good stats, good armor, good movement. 2-inch melee, which they're just fucking dishing out at the minute. Only thing I don't like about Vex Spigot, no 2-inch melee. But thank God for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, squad tactics. Man, what a fucking play. So good.
Target friendly model games. Assist chisel. So, in a team where, like, I can especially see it in Hammer, in a team where your job is to make Hammer King of the Mountain for his mega activation, the idea that you can also go, oh, for one influence, bang, you can have that as well, son. Come on.
Yeah, her and Hammer together, who the fuck could you not kill? For me, when Ishii gives that to Hammer and goes back to base with a model, and Hammer, for me, that's them going, you've got one turn to figure to get her off you before Hammer can come and give you a really bad time.
It's got that thing as where she goes like, right, I'm engaging someone, or even better, I'm engaging two people with my fat ass 2-inch melee.
Yeah.
Right, throw assist onto Hammer, clock goes over, and you just look at them and you're just like, pick one.
Yeah.
But like as well, she's also got share the burden, right? So once per turn, she just takes away a condition.
Yeah.
So, like, well, when they're about to suffer a condition. So, like, say Hammer goes in on someone, he's got a fat stack, you're giving him all the stuff, he's assisting someone, runs in, smashes into them, and they go, all right, then, fine, I'll counter attack, knockdown. She just goes, okay, I'll fall over for some reason.
The only problem that I'd be to give up the effect if she got
but
that.
But then they burn their counter attack.
Yeah.
You can smash them for the momentum. Oh, yeah, I mean,
in that scenario, Hammer off the kettle for a mere two. Plus two damage, but yeah, if you've got someone like Tower tooling up Hammer, and then Hammer coming in with Vink already plus one damage, coming in on plus three, plus two attack for that crowd out, and then the man, fucking Heat, you can be running through people. It won't shock me if, yeah, okay, you engage a couple of models, Hammer comes in with that big fucking damage activation, and because you've got that knockback shit, you mow through one person, move on to the next, and mow through them. Which is a good way, like, it's a really obvious way to play that character trait. Yeah, Chingle, the thing I like about Share the Burden, flexible.
Yeah, it's that flexibility which carries straight on into adaptive strategy, that last trait, which is a trait. It's not a legendary, it's not heroic, it's a trait. It's so good.
Yeah.
Like, you just, once per turn, you just go, someone within 6 inches, your influence, take it off them, give it to someone else. You know, like, maybe you go, you're setting up, you're allocating your influence. The problem I always have when allocating influence is, like, I feel like I'm trying to see into the future. I'm putting influence down and I'm going, what am I going to get back for giving you this? You know, like, I'm making an investment here. Is this going to pay off? But the idea with that sort of almost free do-over, that sort of, well, you know what, that goal run, you know, I think I could get it, but I'm not sure, so Flint's not going to get anything.
Yeah.
Instead becoming, that goal run looks on, yeah, go on, I'll put it on him. And then being able to go, okay, no, they saw that, immediately that's not off. And Chisel being able to go, right, let's just take that off you, drop it on someone else, there we go. The plan, the game's...
The fact it's free of charge, for me, that should cost a point of influence, at least. Because, like, it's so flexible and so good. When you've got, like, when you've got a Flint tied up, and you're going, shit, Flint's gonna die next turn. I've got a shitload of influence getting out of fucker. He's not even, he won't get a goal even if I could get the activation. She'll be able to turn around and going, I'll take that off him. Like, a lot of people imagine it the reverse. Flint's floating around, you know, you've got free influence on tower or whatever, or mallet, and you go, ooh, the goal opportunity come up off the tower on mallet onto Flint. For me, it's just the other way around as well. You go, oh, fucking hell, Flint's gonna die. Shit model. Charm male. Fucking whatever. Okay, I take the influence off him, give it to Mallet. All of a sudden, I'm getting that damage back.
Yeah.
I'm getting my influence back. Some of the worst games I've had on this game by far, when I've lost influence on characters who needed to go.
Well, it's like when we played that Corsair Ox game, and you came in with a full stick of butter on Ox, and the first thing I did was go, nope, push you out, there you go, and you were just like, I've lost all that influence. The ability for you to then go, well, no, I haven't. You haven't lost it.
I'll
just take it off, put it on someone else. Go, in they go.
Meat hook. Really fucking good model. And I get that people have their team where, you know, if I was making a Mason's list and went, and someone came up to me and went, I want you to make a kill list, a goal list, and a blah 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 list. A flex list. I'd put Chingle on every team.
Yeah.
Super flexible, super good. The only bad thing about it is you kind of go down like a sack of shit. 3-2 defense is really good. 13 health though. I'll tell you right now. And then counter attack, she don't get a double something. Push dodge. For 1-inch melee, can have a bit of trouble. Mm. But for me, guys like J-Cart are going to have a fucking hell of a time with her. Mm. Yeah. When I'm putting
as soon as you get anatomical precision in there, or someone managed to hit a weak point at the top of the turn.
Yeah, with my team, I don't key 3-2, I key 2-1.
Yeah.
And yeah. but other than that, that's the only negative I've got to say about her. Overall, great. Not even a bad kicker.
Yeah, I'd have her. I'd put her in any. I'd put her in any Mason's list. Which I think I will. You know, when I go into season 4 and start rolling out other teams. You know, we've almost caught M all, haven't we?
Got captain. Yeah, we're working on it, aren't we?
I was just like saying how adaptive strategy is free when like these cards drop when I'm at work, right? So. When they're at work, the first thing someone does in our like local Guild Ball Facebook chat is someone goes, posts up, this is what it is, and the chatter starts flying.
Yeah.
And I saw people talking about adaptive strategy, and I was like, oh my god, that's insane. That's such a good ability. And I was just thinking, what a great heroic. I was going, oh my god, I can't believe she gets to do that for a moment for a point of momentum. I don't know where I picked up it was heroic. She hasn't even got a fucking heroic. I don't know where I picked that up from, but I must have just seen the ability and gone, wow, that's so good, you know, and just assume
heroic gameplay to influence.
Yeah, yeah. So like, man, yeah. that's awesome. Definitely,
really, it. Just really good. Yeah. Not to be kind about it one way or the other. Just flat out, that is a good thing to have. And even if you don't use it, you can threaten it. More importantly,
that's the thing. It's in the same way that Obulus. Threat hang he's hanging over you your entire game. Mm. Are they going to take all the momentum? You know, the idea that
the answer is yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But when you're looking at that board and you go, right, I'm safe because X cut, right, Flint can't score a goal, Flint hasn't got any influence, suddenly becomes Flint can't score a goal at the moment.
Yeah,
you know, Flint can't score a goal, next activation. But if you get the ball back, manage to get it on him, and you go, yeah, go on then, Brick, you weren't doing anything, gimme that, there you go, Flint, do something.
Well, yeah, that's the thing I like about that. If you can have a model who normally wouldn't get influence fitting on it, or but like if the goal, you could even have free influence on Flint just like a threatener.
Yeah,
he could, him with a free influence or four could even be the threatening of itself, going like Flint could move at any time.
And then when you get ready to gear up, you know, you then go, okay, I've done a bit of setup here, take that off, put it on another one of my killers, you come in, soften someone up, Hammer's gonna wreck shit.
Yeah, well, going like, oh fuck, I don't want to go near Flint. Like, all I'll be doing is giving him whatever, going, that Flint activation didn't work out, but I still get that back. I still get all the damage and all the momentum that would have come with that activation.
I was thinking of was the in an honor list, because we talked a lot about
Hammer. Yeah.
But like, I'm going to show my ignorance here, because I haven't played into a lot of honor, and I haven't played it much since I got the kickoff.
She gets marbles, doesn't she?
Yeah, but it wouldn't stack, because it's the same ability of the same name.
Oh, that'd be fucking good.
But I can't remember what it is. There's something where I think Honor can give someone a second activation, can't she?
Yeah.
So the idea of you going, set up that second activation, this model's done this, but then them going, oh, the other person going, well, they haven't got any influence on them, that second activation doesn't matter. Yeah. And then being able to go, shh, doosh, another full stick, off you pop.
If you manage to do a hell of a setup, you don't have to give up on the setup after the one turn of Honor. It's a lot to blow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, we're starting to talk forum world at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, the potential. Oh, so good.
Yeah. Really fucking good. Yeah. It could be completely different on the board, and I usually tend not to get too carried away with characters who are easy to kill.
She's assist, but that means she's engaging someone.
Yeah. She kind of... Her defense, the push dodge,
and
double dodge, yeah, which isn't bad, but not great either. And in reality, you want to engage in.
Yeah.
And like, by default, if you're already engaging someone, it opens you up to being crowded out in return. And 3-2, that's in the realm of one-shotted. There are some model, especially anatomical model, like a gutter. What a fucking time gutter can I have with a...
See, I think that 2-armor. I think that 2-armor does a huge amount of work.
Yeah, 3-2, good. But for them anatomical model, 3-1 could different world. And for like again, Jaka, who can get a 4 influence, and on a model like her, if I've got a Khmer, well, 3-2 down 2-1. Like I don't even need to hit most of my playbook to really give her a bad time. And I could equally see myself hitting, you know, getting up there on my playbook, leaving bleed on her and giving her a really hard time. And I can equally see activation where good killer, just run into her, just wipe her off the face of the board. Yeah. And like, if you put yourself in a situation where you're relying on the influence transfer.
Yeah.
Like if you've got a mallet on one end, well, I think on the middle, flint on the other, I break that chain in between them, fuck, all of a sudden that influence out, I'm looking at a transfer over. It goes hard. God, fucking good model though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shall we start to round this podcast off with some... We've got some questions, which were...
Yeah.
Uninvited questions.
Oh, yeah. Hey, We didn't just throw ourselves at people and go, we did reply to them, to be fair.
Yeah, but I'm just leaning into it. I'm just showing my ignorance all over the place. Got a couple of questions from William Anderson on Twitter.
Yeah.
Who, I think I'm going to look like an absolute prick if I get this wrong. I think this is tournament organiser deity behind Spring Fling.
Okay.
In the States.
He's got a profile, you know.
I could just click. Yeah. I could literally one click could have sorted this out. But,
No, fuck that shit, better to go.
Yeah, roll the dice, let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah, William Anderson, notorious serial killer.
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, like find out... So you come after with and go, did you reply to that serial killer William Anderson? Everyone knows that. But yeah,
he's asked a question that we actually, a lot of people mention this, like a lot of people mention our dislike for the blacksmiths. I think that without meaning to do so, we've almost gone we go over the top with it, you know, like it's almost a joke, it's almost a fucking meme at this point how much we hate the Smiths. But it is, because he said, why so much recent dislike for blacksmiths? It seems like you guys have an increasing concern / issue / distaste for them. What blacksmith teams are you seeing most often and most effectively? And well, you replied straight away.
Yeah, I'll get it canned on Twitter. You can only go into reply so much. And if you can tell, for a guy like me, you're already quite, you know, verbal.
Having a limited character.
A bit,
then,
yeah.
And then using 4 or 5 of that at the end to say - Ryan.
Yeah. I almost felt self-involved. Someone else mentioned it as well. Like, we're going like, oh,
it's such a weird Leeds meta you've got.
Yeah, we've...
Loving Cena, Chaska, and hating the Smiths. Yeah. And it was just like, no, man, that's just right. That's literally just right.
We've become, yeah.
It's not a meta.
I've become the fucking Leeds meta. Yeah,
it's because you're the fucking vocal one, that's why.
But to come around to my original point, can't trust the meta.
Yeah.
Not always, don't guy in the mix. All of a sudden, I've become fucking Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And I replied to Jake immediately going, like, they Leeds hate them too.
Yeah.
I just really like the model. Like, when I got that hunter in the mystery box, well, I could have got anything, but I got the hunter, shocking enough. And I'm like, holy shit, these traps. Man, that's so fucking cool. Trap Turkens, man. Two of them have got them. Man, and I have an scenario with four traps on the board. I really like her mother, you know.
Yeah,
but I like that. I can like that she can have them all on the board.
Yeah.
So you kind of like crowd out the board. I really like the look of that. I just think it like look cool on the board. Fucking Chaka though, you get them off, you take them off.
Mm.
That should be the way around. You put one down, they're always just there when you come in. Man, I'll be shit at balancing the game. But for me, I mentioned it in the tweet, but we'll go into more detail now. It's not a question of we think the blacksmith are this ridiculous team who, if only people would realise it, they would crush the tournament circuit. I just don't like playing against them.
Yeah.
And I think we should probably underline that in a lot of our points.
Yeah.
There's plenty of stuff I say I wouldn't do or play against or play with. And it never particularly comes from a place of, I've looked at the card and the rule, I'm never going to play them.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I just don't like them.
Yeah. I think it's almost like it's... I think they just kind of take the wind out of yourselves a bit. Like, whenever we've played into them, that armour they've got, it's sort of, it always feels like you never get that bet, you're good shit. You never get that magic moment. You never, when playing, I've never had that moment of, like, oh, I've got my mega rat, or like, I always feel that, like, whenever I've hit into them, and it's probably not helped by the fact that there's one person we play into who plays a blacksmith, and he knows what he's doing with the blacksmiths. Because we've said before that they've got like quite a sort of pre-canned activations, you know.
Yeah.
Anvil goes, he turns on Sledge, you know. Ferrite goes, she sets iron up, yeah. You know, like, so...
Yeah, Hearth gives alloy.
Exactly, blah, blah, blah. Like, so they've got them sort of pre-built things, and Dave, who played the Smiths for a while in our meta, he is just, like, godlike with the ability to see... Mm. Like, you know how I said earlier when I played Rage, and I went, oh, that's how you kill things. I swear that Dave just, like, when he's making them side-by-side cards for seemingly everyone who plays Guild Ball, yeah. He sort of just looks... It's almost like he scans them directly into his fucking brain, because he just sees everything. So I think our problem is that whenever we've played into the Blacksmith, we've almost played into Blacksmiths always on a really good day.
Yeah.
Like, I can definitely see how if one thing goes wrong, they can start to crumble and they spin out of control. But we've just never experienced that.
Yeah.
That's something we've never seen. And it's also, you also said that you dislike Jank, where Bill said, I suspect that disliking Jank will make you a sad boy with the new models and minor guilds coming out.
Yeah.
And you then sort of had to clarify by Jank, like, the thing is that Jank has an actual meaning, but the Roll Better podcast said, no, Jank has, this is what Jank means, you are incorrect. Right, but...
their definition.
I can't remember. Well, see, Ryan, what it is, when I listen to Roll Better podcast, I just sort of listen, I'm just sort of skipping through, and then whenever they start mentioning one of us, I start listening again. But no, they were sort of, they had that, it was actually quite an interesting discussion, because they actually said, no, this is what Jank means. It's thrown around a lot, but that's not what it means. Because in this case, what you actually meant was sort of a play that had no right to reply.
Yeah, I
do this, and this happens because that's my ability. You can't do anything about it, sorry, but that's what happens.
Another term I've used before, gimmick, but gimmick kind of has a negative connotation with it.
Yeah.
Gimmick implies that you're doing kind of like, you know, kind of doing something you shouldn't meant to be doing, or, you know, it's not like legit in some way. Jank, I use that as a general catch-all term. I know people, for me, like I use what I call, I've got a couple of my own janky plague. I'm not saying you shouldn't use jank. For me, the core of what it means to go against a janky style player is like, okay, when you have someone who's able to do a lot and you don't get to put your foot in the door.
Mm.
For me, I'll use the example I normally use. Hearn, I get the ball to... Ferrin gets the ball, he puts a 4-inch, 8-inch in front of Hearn, he passes to Hearn, he takes the 4-inch forward towards the forest. On Hearn's turn, he teleports...
To the sprint, far end of it.
Sprint car charges, gets the goal with the class influence. But the thing about that setup is that you've got an activation to try and get in the mix and think on how you're going
to
counter.
Even, like I said before, you've got the chance to put your foot in the door.
Yeah. That even though that's a super janky play, and that's actually a really hard one to counter.
Mm.
Super fucking hard to get around that. Because by default, Hearn will start on the other end of the pitch with all the movement in the world. That is not an easy one to get around, but you do have a bit of time to prepare, even if it's just to get your fattest base model and go, they're going to get in the way of the goal.
Yeah.
You kind of...
Or walk up, in the situation you've just described there, walk up and you push him an inch.
Yeah.
Walk up, get the 1-inch push.
Yeah. On that element of it, even if the reply, if you know what I mean, of your activation is really weak, it feels better. You know what I mean? Like, even if you go, I can't do much about that, but I'll move that guy here. Yeah. I'll try it. That's best
I can do. Even if all you do is you go, I'm going to move here, or you go, I'm going to do this to engage him. So when I get the kick, get the goal kick, I'm kind of setting myself up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Even then, you go, not much I could do about it. It didn't change the outcome, but I do feel better knowing I could do shit.
Because I'm still playing this game.
For me, a lot of the most powerful jank that's ever been in the game, by far, are the ones where you do something and your opponent can do nothing in reply. And again, we used Jack before as an example, with him pushing, but I get the reply is just not being within 8-inch of the pitch. Yep. So it's not literally, I have to, every jank has to be an activation sort of thing.
Mm.
But when you can cover 24 inch of the board and get ridiculous level of goal kick, and you're like, okay, and now I've got up another guy with 28 inch and curve. Like, again, ferrite and iron, that for me, that's jank to find. That going, fucking giving iron ridiculous level of movement, getting her own ridiculous level of movement, and just feeling that you're on the receiving end of the just maelstrom of, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
And even if I could think of something, what difference does it make? Like, by the time he's done with his turn, he's got points and I haven't. And for me, that's where jank kind of kicks. The blacksmith is super janky. Don't think over the top of it. Ferrite and iron are the example, because everyone knew ferrite and iron.
Yeah.
Burnish a bit more. But burnishing jank, for lack of a better word, is kind of more honest.
Yeah.
He does the character playing. I can stay out of his range if I really want to. Yeah. I can flip my guys up and negate some of the damage.
You can't just take your fucking goalpost off the pitch.
Yeah. So. It's a hard one to get into the detail of. Yeah.
So that's basically that, really. Then rolling on to second question from Bill. Another question: do you think your POV, your point of view, is skewed to thinking goal scoring focused teams are stronger because you both tend to play scoring teams versus takeout fighting teams? So this is something that I've noticed we've been picked up on the Discord for as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because of how we're saying things, which obviously in the podcast I can see is going to be a huge fucking issue. But when we were saying that goal scoring is strong, we weren't saying that the takeout game is really weak. It was, you said that when you kill two models, you get two VP twice. When you score a goal, you get four VP in one shot, and you get an influence for it. You get the goal influence. Like, I've spoken to a few people who've been playing the game longer, and they've been in it longer. And like, this is just something that apparently there's a bit of a sort of a meta thing, you know,
yeah.
Where the sort of the Europeans, the Brits, we kind of think that scoring goals is the way to go because, you know, one dice roll, there's 4 points. Whereas on the other side of the Atlantic, Americans think that because there's more dice rolls, that the average is going to be strong. Yeah. You know. Because all you need with a goal is for the one dice roll to go wrong once, and you are that. A lot of the goal scoring teams aren't set up for getting that deep into your territory to get the ball back. Yeah. You know, so I can see where that comes from. And if what I've just said there is completely wrong, then you know, that blame the other people I met who told us. but. I really like goals. I lean heavily towards goals because I like that I'm closing the game up quicker. If I get four, I see it. If I score a goal, I've got another third of the victory points required for me to be the one going to the top table and you to be the guy walking to the bottom table. But you sort of prefer, when we're playing, you prefer the takeout game, which I think is really interesting that we've come across as this huge goal scoring is the way forward sort of paragons, when really that's not how, I wouldn't say that's how you play at all. You'll take goals if they're available, but you sort of seem to prefer to kill people.
For me, I like the model I like, and nothing we're going to change that. If it just so happened that my hunting team happened to be really goal scoring, I'd probably play a really goal scoring game. But if it turns out their model for them sculpts and the trap tokens that I love.
The bear, the guy with the shotgun,
yeah,
who brought the traps, the guy who brought the other traps.
Yeah, it just so happened they're better at killing. Yeah. But
the,
not
the
like,
captain you had, so you didn't have to buy another one.
Yeah. For me, it's a hard one to put your foot down on a particular area, because a lot of people listening, I think, mistake what we say. It's like, it comes with being on the podcast. We've come on the podcast and go, okay, we are going to talk about Guild Ball.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give the illusion that we think we're like super experts on the game.
I don't want to give the illusion that we think we know what we're fucking talking about.
Speak for yourself, Alex. I am a genius. Who, if it wasn't for Guild Ball, I would literally be curing cancer right now.
But, like, we are two guys who, well, this entire podcast started because whenever we finished a game, we probably talked for about an hour and a half about that game and about the game as a whole. And we just thought, let's put it out there, you know.
I'm a big believer in Sturgeon's Law, which is 90% of everything is shit. And I made peace with that a long time ago. I'm more than willing to admit that when I sit down to come on this mic, 90% of what I say is likely shit. But 10% might be alright.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to settle for the 10%. Again, Guild Ball, same thing. 90% of my activation for shit. Man, that 10%. Yeah, the...
I feel like we should almost have that as a disclaimer at the start of the show. Do you know what I mean? Like, hi, we should start by, hi, welcome to the firm, this is episode X. By the way, we don't think we know what we're talking about. So take everything we say with a pinch of salt. We're not trying to convince you of an opinion. We're not trying to bring something around. We're just spitballing.
Yeah,
everything we're saying is just spitballing ideas.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to. The way I viewed the podcast when we first got now to do it, we're two friends chatting shit about the game, like we were doing anyway. And the way I view the listener is that they're the third friend. They just can't talk.
Yeah.
So I get that when
so people, like me in most social situations.
Yeah, like me. Like in fact, yeah, I view the podcast as two friends, but you're the friend who can't talk. So I get that kind of. I get why people feel frustrated when we hear shit they don't agree with.
Mm.
It's the version of like watching a game show and knowing all the answers.
Yeah.
And going, whoa. How many, what's the kickstart for Velocity for £10,000? And I'm going, that's easy, Chris. Free kick. Like, well, no. That's for a trip to Hawaii. Well, fuck, I'd have got that.
Yeah.
You know, I get why people look and when they hear shit they know is wrong, go, But I don't want to give the impression that, this is even vaguely researched. I barely look at the forum. I occasionally go on Twitter. Now, Facebook, kind of. But I'm just that kind of guy. My own opinion is enough for me, kind of thing. I just like to do my interpretation of the game. But I don't want people looking at it and think we think we're experts.
No. You know? It's basically the fact that we love this game. Every time another Guild Ball podcast is released, I crush it up and snort it into my ears as fast as I can. Like, I've constantly got, like, monitors everywhere absorbing all the YouTube content. Anytime Guild Ball content is released, I'm trying to get a hold of it. And I just want to add to that. That's like
I've looked into like three other episodes of a podcast. I feel like an absolute twat, you know, because of guys who are making podcasts going like, I checked out your episode, it was really good. Oh, thanks, man. I don't have time. I literally just don't have time. Oh, my God.
Street Fighter.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 14, ain't it? It's an MMO. Fucking hell.
So, Bill, in answer to that question... I think it's because of the goal influence.
Yeah.
And it's one dice roll, which if you can bonus time and use Angel, you can really fucking stack the deck on.
Yeah, Angel. I think when we're playing Ghost Thorn team...
Yeah, that's the
thing. If you're rolling less than four dice, we feel like something gone terribly wrong.
When we're looking at someone who's got Striker at the bottom of their card, we're going... How do they...
To be fair, I have looked at some models. I can't
figure out how they get the seven dice you need to roll to.
Yeah, I can't see it. Man, Bonesaw, only 3-8.
Re-rolling.
Yeah. I keep forgetting to get excited, you know.
Yeah. That's what people think you should.
Yeah, but in short, do we think our point of view is skewed? Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, totally. Absolutely.
But everyone is.
And our point of view is skewed, and... We don't think that it's right, and I really hope that other people don't think that we think that it's right.
Yeah, and to be honest, I kind of want more hate mail. I kind of want more people. If you listen to it and you go, oh man, they were really fucking wrong during that episode, I don't want people to go, oh well, if you got no nice, don't say it all. It's easy to get, when someone sends you a message going, great episode, really liked it, it's easy to get that
yeah.
and go, oh well, thank you, job done. I think it's a lot better when people actually take the time to go, dude, I thought you were really fucking, I kind of thought you were just talking shit that entire episode, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I hate you both, in fact. I kind of appreciate that in a weird way. I mean, maybe it's a different...
No, it's because that's... what I've seen here is by one tweet. It's taken one tweet here to say, do you think your point of view is skewed because you're saying that goal scoring teams are stronger? And that one comment has made me realise that everything we're saying, A, people think that we... You know what I mean? It's almost opened my eyes to what we fucking said. Anyway, I think we've answered that question now.
In reply, yeah.
And third question, why do you think the Church is such a strong team?
Okay, another...
From Bill, again.
Yeah, another one. So, came again. The objective, the subjective. Not played against the Church one. I've only vaguely looked at the card. But I come from the same player. The Church at the minute are sitting in a weird area right now. Because they're a new team in an old version of the game. For me, the Church are a Season 4 team playing in Season 3. And right now, I think they're kind of fine as they are. Because they've not got... Unless Fangtooth is just a murderer. And when I say murderer, I mean can take two models out in an activation-style murderer.
Mm.
Or get them near enough. Church or goal scoring team.
Yeah.
And three goals are not easy to get if you think in a game. They've got good tools and you can't score against them as well.
It comes down to that thing. You can't score if you haven't got the ball.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't think that we were portraying the fact that we think the church is such an incredibly awesome team. But I think that just comes down to the fact that, I enjoy the football game. I enjoy the football game. I talk about the football game a lot. I prefer the ball part of Guild Ball.
Yeah.
So I think that the church is such a strong team because of, like I've said, they've got all this fluidity, they've got this motion, they've got this the way they move the ball.
Yeah.
They don't just go. Some goal runs can be quite static in a weird way.
Yeah.
It can be like Grayscales, I think, is an incredibly static goal scoring model, which is going to sound ridiculous from what I'm about to say, where you can go, he's got the ball, he sprints, he where they go, he buys the shot, right? If you compare that to I pass the ball over here, take the dodge, I use I'm open, take the ball back, get the dodge, sprint, but I also did this, so I'm now getting an extra VP. You know, like the sort of the moving parts that are there, I think that my excitement for it has come across as thinking its strength.
Mm. I don't think goal scoring teams are ridiculous or anything like that. And like, yeah, I quite enjoy playing into goal teams that I know need free hero. Like, for me, that going like, man, killing the ball on a 2-2 team is nowhere near as effective as killing the ball on a free hero team. Yeah. And you can make that ball very, you can kill that ball particularly hard on some team. Especially when you got like my mascot, who can get defence, who can run off to the middle of fucking nowhere. For me, the reason I feel the church could be strong is because they're in that vague area right now where the season four changes are going to dictate how good they actually are.
Mm.
And my main thinking is like, they've got all these tools, but they're not spectacular right now. I don't think the church are like OP or anything. But when season four comes round, that opinion could completely change.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the way it'll change, all boats will rise with the tide.
Yeah.
And you can feel just as comfortable fielding a Brewer team against them than any other team. Or, you know, any week, whatever week team considered at the moment. But yeah, I'm in that grey area. And Pride, and not to me, I think Pride is unambiguously great fucking mascot. He does a job. Like, maybe my enthusiasm for Pride came across a bit too much. The Church and Union generally are one of those teams where, on an individual level, their models are really good. But you don't get infinite influence.
Yeah.
Yeah, free influence on Benediction, and, well, spent on free influence on Veteran Gutter, or, you know, whoever. When I kind of had a bit of a rant on Pride, mascot were always kind of the weak link in a team. And Pride filling such a good role and such a solid role where a player would otherwise fit. Like, if you want to do what Pride did on the Butcher team or the Alchemist or the Engineer, you need to give a player up for that. You can't just go, you need to bring Tenderite, you need to bring Compound.
It also comes back from the fact that with the church, it's not only a choice to get such a good thing. You have to have it. You have to have Brisket, you have to have Pride. You know, it's not like at the moment in the Union, you're like, should I take him? I want Strongbox. I want Fashenna. Should I take Coin? I really want Bag of Coffers. The idea that it's just like, no, I'm the church. That's what I've got.
Yeah. I get why people think I've not played against them. Don't know how they're like. They could be great. It could be shit. I don't even know. I'm going off what I see on the card. And again, Kingdom 4 could come out and it could make complete sense to me. And I think that will be the case.
Yeah.
I'll read the rules and go, aha, I've got nothing to be afraid of the entire time. I'm always very wary when new changes come into a game like this.
It's what we said when we spoke about the oncoming season 4 a few episodes ago. Like, it's kind of nerves, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Edition changes is where, because it is, it's Guild Ball 4th edition. Edition changes are where, like, communities can just drop off the face of the earth. Like, when X-Wing 2nd edition was released, the amount of trade sites that exploded with, this is every X-Wing ship I've ever bought, fuck this game, by the way. do you know what I mean? Like, when people see rules changes and they don't like it, so.
Yeah, there have been, again, in a lot of games I've played, go, oh, patch 2 point whatever came out, just tanks the entire community. Mm. And hard to recover from a bad thing like that.
Which is not what we're expecting at all.
I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm Sturgeon Claw, I'm 90% everything will be fine, I'm 10% unknown factor right now. Yeah. And that unknown factor might not become obvious until it's become broken. when ThemeForge are putting together Kingdom 4, I get the feeling they haven't gone together and gone, how can we make something ridiculous and possible and ruin the entire game?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, guys, instead of a ball, it's an ultimate frisbee.
Yeah. How about for the New Guild ball, there are 5 balls on the pitch. For me, what could potentially be broken about Kingdom 4, we won't figure out until it's been broken.
They'll patch it. That's one of the things I love about Steamforge, the way they just go, hands up, errata.
I am in a bit of a, weird zone right now with the game.
Speaking of season 4 so much, that's all of Bill's questions. If I was right and this is the TO deity, the god of for the community that organises Spring Fling, then that feels pretty sick.
Should we click on the actual Twitter link?
No, I want to leave it as a mystery. Yeah. Then I feel pretty incredible that he's got in touch. And even if he's sitting at home going, what a bunch of dickheads, to the point, I need to fucking sort these kids out. Which isn't how any of them came across.
Yeah, thanks for the question.
Speaking of season 4, you might have noticed that when we came back from the Leodis tournament in the last game, that we were definitely waving the flag for Leodis.
Yeah.
We think it's sick, we think it's great. It's to the point that we're actually going to put a tournament on.
Yeah, we'll be doing our own event.
Yeah, it's the first time either of us have ever done anything like this. I mean, I've put on a Frisbee tournament before, but I've never put on a Wargame tournament, and it's going to be the 20th of October.
Yeah.
So season 4 will have dropped.
Oh yeah, should be out by then.
Yeah, so...
Hopefully, rule book from China don't get delayed.
It's just really exciting.
Rule coming over the internet for China.
So we're going to have a few people just sort of floating around with printouts just going, the entire time. But yeah, it's going
to
be...
We're hoping to make it an enjoyable tournament experience. And because it's our first tournament, that kind of can be run smoothly and everyone's going to go according to plan.
As I've said before, expect trophies and catastrophes. It comes across better in the Twitter medium because it's catastrophes.
Jesus Christ.
There'll be an event, there'll be a Facebook event.
There will be,
we'll start pushing it, we'll start ramming it down your throats, you'll get sick of it. It'll be Leodis Games, October 20th. Cool.
I'm looking forward to the episode where we talk about how unironically hard it is to run a tournament.
After this guy has just run like the king of all tournaments in the stage. It was like, oh my god, a 16 people. A 16 man event can be really hard.
I'm feeling it already. In fact, the whole thing. Alright.
I think that we're well over outstayed our welcome.
I think we'll call it there. Thanks for everyone getting in touch. More importantly, thank you everyone for listening. Sorry for the late episode. We hope you've enjoyed, and even if you haven't, be sure to leave a big fuck you on the Facebook. If you want to tell me to go fuck myself, leave one on the Facebook. If you want to tell Alex to go fuck himself, at the Firm Podcast
on Twitter. like we said, anyone who gets in touch, we do really appreciate it. And when Bill was asked us to fight over a few questions, even if they weren't intended to sort of open our eyes to what we've been saying, made us realise that maybe some things are coming across in the wrong way. That's not worth trying to get to at all.
Okay. I did. Sign it off. Alec.
Peace.
Jeez.
Yeah. Should I try again? Should I try again? A different one? Why don't we sign off in the way all good podcasts sign off?
Yeah. Oh dear God. Just cut it all off.